Hey, just a quick note. Andy Slammons asked me to mention about his upcoming private label retreat. This one's actually going to be held in Orlando in October, October 6th through the 9th. If you're interested in private label and you want to get one-on-one with him, Leron, and Nathan, this is the environment. This is where you're going to be up late at night working on growing your business. Q4 is here. You've already got that set. Let's get 2018 up to snuff. Get going with the new product that you bring to market. And you're going to learn about it at his retreat in Orlando, October 6th through the 9th. If you're interested in any way, they've already sold, I think, half of them. So there's a little bit of time left to get in. Just private message me and I'll give you a link that they have so you could see it and make a decision. And there's some testimonials and that kind of thing. So again, just private label me and I'll get the info to you. I was talking to Karen Locker the other day from Solutions for E-Commerce. We all know she's a sponsor of my show. She pays me. I don't want to hide that, right? The other thing she reminded me, though, is that if you sign up for her service through my link, you get $50 off, right? You knew that. I forgot that she offers an inventory health assessment. I'm like, Karen, I probably should be talking about that valuable service. She's going to take a look through your inventory and help you figure it out. They're going to take care of your suppressed listings. You're tired of having stranded inventory? Is inventory getting lost? When's the last time you looked at your shipments to get them reconciled? How about refunds? Has that happened? Well, Karen takes care of all that for me. She's been doing it for almost 2 years. I pay the same rate you do, but I'm very, very pleased with the service. Two well-known guys in the area reach out to me saying, hey, you've been with her. Are you satisfied? I'm perfectly satisfied. And again, I can message her. I get the services I need. So it's Solutions for E-Commerce. The only way you're going to get that deal is using my code MOMENTUM. I have a link on my website. You have to go there. If you're thinking about outsourcing that piece of your business, get your inventory looked at.
Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 221, Jeremy Byron. You know, again, this is another software pitch kind of thing. I let them do their pitches. I don't benefit again. Don't get mistaken by that. But again, I think that what he's offering has value, right? He's helping you figure out a way to know what inventory to buy. And there were two points in this interview that really struck for me. One is he said, look, take it for 2 weeks. Within 2 weeks, you don't need to wait 30 days to see if the software is going to be good for you. 2 weeks, you'll know pretty quickly. And they give it to you for 2 weeks. So I think there's value there. The other thing to do is to talk with him directly. To me, that's the answers. They kind of vet you to make sure it's a good fit because they want a long-term customer and you want a long-term relationship. So I think there's real value there. Let's get into the podcast. Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. I'm excited about today's guest because I got to meet him face-to-face and sit down at a couch and hang out with him at an Amazon event. And it really gets me thinking a lot about the direction of the business and, what people should be taking. And so this gentleman seems to have a lot of knowledge and I really like what he said. So I decided to have him on, Jeremy Byron from Forecastly or forecast.ly. How did I do?
Great. Forecastly is right, Stephen. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm very excited to be here.
I appreciate you coming on. We met at the Boost with Amazon conference in New York a couple weeks ago. And I remember just sitting there chatting and, unfortunately, once people find out I have a podcast, they're all over me, all the vendors, right? You see them swarm and it's like, no, I just want to pick and choose because I understand. I mean, A, I have to be careful because I do have some sponsors on my show and I'm careful on that. I'm not against having somebody. I'm careful on it. And just because you sell something doesn't mean that I should recommend it because it might be an extra cost or an extra layer that's not necessary. However, being a former accountant, I guess I can say that since I've retired, is I love what your basic concept is, which is basically, hey, let's let the best predictor of future performance be past performance, and therefore let's help you get to that relatively easy. And I think Forecastly seems to do that based on what I've been able to research. So let's first get to talking about where you came from, because you were a seller at one time, right? So prior to that, were you an entrepreneur? What did you go to school for?
Sure. I went to school for business. It was sales and marketing. Hmm. And then I went to UConn here in Connecticut. That's where I am right now.
Were you going to be a salesman?
Yeah, actually, I did sales for quite a few years coming out of school. I did pharmaceutical sales, and then I did medical device sales. I really liked it. I don't want to say I was the best at it, but I wasn't too bad. I had a good time. But I learned pretty quickly that corporate America just wasn't for me, right? I think that's where a lot of sellers stand, is they realize pretty quickly that, hey, they want to be out on their own, and they find a way to do it, and they just make it happen. So I was.
What wasn't right for you, though? What wasn't? What didn't work for you in corporate America?
You know, it's funny what a strict schedule will do to you. Mm-hmm. And to say that I need to be at work from 8 o'clock to 5 o'clock just wasn't my, I don't know, it just wasn't my thing, even though I work more hours than that today, which is funny. But to think that I had to be there, it just messed with my mind.
Was it that way in college for you too? I mean, were you the guy rolling into class a few minutes late because that's the way you roll? Or did you like that rigidity? Let's be truthful.
Yeah, I have to be honest. That could have been me.
Okay.
It was in making it to class. Well, didn't happen every week. But I was pretty good in school. I came from a family that was, work hard, play hard. You have to do whatever it is that your goal is. So get that accomplished. And if you get that accomplished, then you can have a good time doing it at the same time or afterwards. So my folks were pretty strict as far as, hey, you got to get good grades. I had a 3.5 or something in college, which isn't incredible, but I want to say it's like an A- or on average, mm-hmm. something like that. So I did well in school, but I had a good time while I was doing it.
I don't think that that's a bad thing. I think that's a generational thing. I think that at least how old are you, Jeremy?
I'm 35.
35. So my son's a little younger than you, my oldest one, a couple of years. But I noticed that with him too, is that it's a difference. He understands that he's not going in corporate America. He wasn't going to be working at that company for the next 30 years, which is different than what I would have been told my whole life. Hey, you go to school, get a job, and you work there for 30 years till you retire, and then go, and then you get to play golf. Then you get to travel. Then you get to do all those things, right? That's what I've been told my whole life, right? Your generation is different. Was it your parents that changed that for you because of that work hard, play hard? Or is it kind of your peers in your age group?
I think it was mostly my parents.
Okay.
Some of my peers, I had some folks that I want to – it's hard to say in college that they were entrepreneurial, but they had that kind of mindset to them. But I grew up in – when I was in college, my family opened their – I wouldn't want to say their first business, but it was where my mom and dad were actually working together. So they were both self-employed. And I got to see that, where they worked an insane number of hours. I have a lot of respect for them. But they took every Friday off during ski season, and they went skiing
nice.
All week, which was a pretty cool thing.
Nice.
And I'm like, wow, this is neat. Like, you don't
have to. That's a choice.
Exactly. So you can get all your work done and hit your goals and make the money that you need to make, but you can do it in 4 days instead of doing it in 5 days or more than that.
And even when you were in corporate America, isn't that true that you could have, had you pushed yourself and got organized, been done in 2, 3, maybe 4 days versus the 5 that it was just you were filling time? And it's not a negative. I mean, every company's that way. But that was my experience too, is that if I really pushed myself, you know, when I wanted it and I needed to do something else, I could get it done a lot faster.
You are exactly correct. Yeah. It's but it was frowned upon.
Oh, yeah. And I think it's going to have to change. You know, I mean, I keep hearing about this European model, and I don't know that that's the right model, where everybody takes a 2-hour, you know, afternoon lunch or whatever it is, or drop down to a 30-hour work week or whatever. But I do believe it has to change. It will change because it is changing. In my community here, you know, the number of retail stores that have closed is just as large as every other community. And so those people's jobs, and I keep saying this, are affected, right? But not only them, it's the delivery drivers, it's the restaurants around them, it's all those different things. So something's going to change. We're in the middle of it, and it seems to be accelerating. And therefore, those of us who have chose to design a life around our work and our life, right, because they are intermingled, I think we're in a much better position. Do your parents still own their own business?
They sold that one, and then they started another one, and then they ended up selling that one as well. And Now they both work. They both work full time. They could retire, or they probably should retire, but they still have a lot. Like, they travel a lot, so
okay.
They have kind of jobs that they enjoy at this point in time, and
but that meet their life that they choose, because, like you say, they're traveling a lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
Love it. And I don't think owning a business has to be the end all be all for everyone. And even if they were good at it, if they got what they wanted out of it, and now they get to structure their life the way they want by somebody else's, you know, working for somebody else, I think that's awesome. Again, I just look for happiness.
I agree 100% with you. There was a lot of stuff that I really enjoyed about working in a very large company, but it's the path that we choose, right? And we can't look back.
So you had to give up that stuff. So now you own a company, and I don't know how many people you have working for you, or if they're just contractors because it's, you know, software. But are you cognizant of that when you're mandating, hey, we need to get this done? I mean, do you think about that stuff?
100%. Yeah, 100%. So everyone, we do utilize some folks like designers that are outside, but most people are employees, actual employees of Forecastly. And everyone on the team is remote. 90% are US based. And anyone that's writing code or dealing with customer data is here in the US. And I tell everyone, we're all remote. It's obviously based on trust. So I don't know if someone's there from 9 to 5. And honestly, it doesn't really matter to me. Our lead developer likes to go to the gym in the middle of the day. Our customer success manager will take runs. Sometimes she does it in the morning. Sometimes she does it at the end of the day. But it's cool. That's why we do what we do. Like, everyone has flexibility to choose the hours, relatively speaking, that they want to work. As long as we're getting the job done, it's totally up. You know, they have the responsibility. That's why they were hired. I trust them. And we don't have to have a strict schedule.
Did you ever have a job that thought the same way? Because you were in sales, right? Especially pharmaceutical sales, right? It's results, right? It's you know, get the doctors, bring them crappy food, and get them to buy some crap, right? And get all that jazz. So that was a number driven. But did you also get managed by time with that? Or were they just able to give you just, hey, hit your numbers and we don't care what you do?
The funny thing that I found, Stephen, it was 100%. In that role, it was 100% based upon the manager or the boss.
Oh.
I had some managers that would, are you working right now? They call me at 8 o'clock in the morning to ensure that I'm out on the road working. If I'm hitting my numbers, I don't need a phone call. If I'm not hitting my numbers, if I'm not hitting the goals that we need to hit, then I deserve a phone call because I'm not showing that I deserve the responsibility. But I hit my numbers. So I had the majority of my bosses, they didn't care if I ended my day at 3 on a Friday because I wanted to go golfing, or even if I wanted to end it at noon. But it was 100% based upon the manager.
And I want to dig one more time on this one and beat the horse a little bit more. Was the manager that managed your time rather than the results, were they older? Not old. Were they mid, you know, probably at that point 40s, 50s, who have been in the business for a while and maybe this is their second stint? I'm trying to understand that because that's the generation I would have grown up with. You know, it was like, oh, you got to be in here. Whoa, you're 10 minutes late. Whoa, what's going on here? You know, I mean, that's the way I was raised. That's the way after all, I was a controller. So that was my nature. But that was seemed to be my generation. I'm wondering, did you experience that? Was that your experience too?
You know, yes and no.
Okay.
It's in my particular case, yes. But then some of my colleagues that had a different manager, they had younger managers, and it was just more of a personality. So how well do you trust other people?
Oh,
and
okay.
If they don't trust other people, then they're going to micromanage and stay on top of you when they don't actually need to. And it has a negative effect.
So it wasn't cultural. It was individual, like you said, right? It wasn't the culture, it sounds like, because some managers were able to get around that. Interesting. So you now are, it's important that you have that culture where a little more free, but again, I'm sure you hold them to a high standards.
100%. As long as we're hitting our goals, we have to, and we're having fun. Having fun is the most important thing. Could I go make more money elsewhere? Probably. If I went to work for somebody else, I could probably make more money. But I absolutely love what I do, and I want to make sure that everybody else on the team loves what they do as well. You know, that is the most important part, or the most important thing at the end of the day, right? We all end up in the ground. That I don't mean that in a negative way, but I mean life is short, right? So right. We might as well have fun doing what we're doing. You know?
I think that sounds like another generational thing, is that making the amount of income you need, because I've seen this study out there, you know, you need $70,000 for happiness, right? That's where it starts. You don't get much happier making more than that. I don't know where that number comes from, but that's what they posted. And so that seems to be another generational thing where people in their 30s, and I don't know about 20s, I guess I do have a younger son, but he's still in college. But I wonder, is that the same amongst your friends, that they'll turn down that larger salary for the quality of the life that they're looking for?
I think so, yeah. Hmm. I mean, I think that's the way it stands for a lot of younger folks. But I'm still, I graduated college 13 years ago now. Mm-hmm. So it's been a while. There are a lot of folks that are younger than me that have a completely different mindset, but I think it just kind of relates to that, the entrepreneurial mindset, where if you're not content, you got to figure it out so that you can make yourself content.
Is that why you started selling on Amazon?
100%.
You weren't content. I mean, was it because you had success? I mean, I know you were successful, but what was it trying to fill? Was it just trying to get that business to see that you could do it on your own, separately from being told what to do to sell this product and hit this goal, that kind of thing?
Well, the funny thing is I think we have to get kind of to the backstory, which is I was in sales, and I had bought my first condo, and I was pretty young, and I had all this stuff around the house, right? When you move, you just kind of realize, oh, I don't need a lot of this stuff any longer, and I sold it all on eBay.
Okay.
And I was a young bachelor at the time. I was like, wow, it was, to be brutally honest, it was kind of like beer money fun money, where, oh, wow, I had all this discretionary income this month. And I went over to my parents they invited me over for dinner one night, and I was kind of chatting with them and said, yeah, I sold this stuff on eBay. It was pretty cool. And my dad's like, well, why don't you buy, because they owned the office supply company at the time. They were like, well, why don't you buy from us at cost? We'll sell it to you at cost. And if you make money, great. And if you lose money, it's your own fault. So I pretty quickly lost some money on products. You know, everybody does it. I feel like if it's selling, then you're going to lose some money, or it's just going to sit there and it's not going to sell. But so I sold some office supplies, pretty quickly figured out what was going to work and what wasn't. And I got the model down. And then I came across this thing. I was going to open up a Yahoo store. I came across this thing called Amazon Marketplace, and we're talking, I think, at least 10 years ago. It was a long time ago. So I came across this thing called Amazon Marketplace, and I quickly tried it out and realized, wow, this is really going to work. I'll just keep selling the same products over and over as long as I can make a margin on it.
Did you go right to FBA, or were you still MFing?
FBA didn't exist yet.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would, the funny thing is,
Is this?
I want to say about 10 years ago.
2008, because FBA would have been 2008 thereabouts. So yeah, that would have been 2007. So yeah, you were really early. I mean, really early. I mean, they were around for years before it, but I mean, that's early.
There weren't too many folks that were selling on the office supply category. It was to the point where Amazon was at a place where it was still known as, you know, a bookseller with other stuff on the site. And I would say to folks, oh yeah, I sell office supplies on Amazon. Like, well, I guess that makes sense if, you know, you want to buy a book and you can also buy a pen with it. And because it wasn't the mall that it is today, which is really funny. Yeah, it's funny to think of it like that. To look back, because I buy everything on Amazon now except for groceries. And
which you will be getting soon.
You got it. You got it. So it was, it was before FBA. I was selling pen refills. I remember driving around. I would print off all my orders in the morning, I would fill up my envelopes, my padded envelopes, and then when I was out making my sales calls, I would drop them off at the post office.
Nice.
And it was pretty cool. And then FBA, I got a phone call from the FBA team and said, we have this thing. It's called Fulfillment by Amazon. It's in beta for your category, which was office products. Do you want to try it? And I thought it was a scam. I was like, well, why do I want to pay $4 when it's – well, anything's worth a try, right? So I tried it out, and I pretty quickly realized that I could sell lots and lots of goods, and I didn't have to do hardly any work.
And where were you buying this stuff?
I was buying it originally from my parents, but within a few months, my parents were selling it to me at their cost, right? So I was throwing off their profit and loss because they weren't making any money on these goods. So within a few months, I was buying it from a wholesaler.
So you had your own, and you scaled to that level. What do you remember how large you got? Because you were still, this was very, very, very part-time. Do you remember how large you got before you stopped?
Before I stopped shipping myself?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was probably shipping maybe 10 to 15 orders a day.
Oh, wow. That's material. That's a lot of work. But
it was a lot of work. Yeah, it was. It's funny to think how easy it is today. And it was a completely different ball game back then, where just to pick and pack an order, it takes time and it's worth money. And if I'm making $5 on a pen and it takes me an hour to pack this many orders, is it really worth my time? Probably not. But it was different, and I had the time, so it was a pretty cool thing.
But you learned a skill too. I mean, I would sit back and say that you learned a real skill set, because I think anyone who right now who just jumps into FBA and then they complain about it, they really need to go back and pack some orders themselves and have to do it every day, including, you know, the days you don't feel good and those, you know, that Monday when the weekend orders came in and that, right? I mean, that's a perspective issue that I think that people don't have.
And then do it in the holiday season too, when your revenue quadruples and now you have to ship 60 orders in a day, and and there's nobody else there but you, or you have to hire a team member and then lay that team member off after the holidays. That's not fun.
No, that's not fun at all. Woo. So you were there early. You've done it for a while. How long did you sell on FBA? I mean, were you still? Did you ever go full time selling on FBA?
Yeah. So in 2011, I didn't like my sales job anymore, and I was making more money selling on Amazon I was full time. So it was like, I kind of thought to myself, why am I doing this? Like, why am I working for a company right now when I have a business? And my income was going to be cut significantly because I'm completely cutting my full-time job. So I'm still making a good salary or a good income on Amazon, but I'm going to cut out all that money that's coming from the corporate. But the next day I went in and I said, all right, I'm going to give my 2 weeks notice. And in sales, you don't really have to give a 2 weeks notice. So they said, all right, have a good weekend.
And you're done.
Best of luck in the future. Yeah, and that was it. And then on the Monday, I went full time. And it was.
Let me ask you this, though. Because you're a young guy, didn't you get used to the money? I mean, because you were making a great living selling. But then you make this great living on Amazon. You said you're making more on Amazon. So all of a sudden, you're wealthy. I mean, at your age, right? I mean, all of a sudden, you got big income. Did you adjust your lifestyle for that income? And then how do you give that up if you did?
Well, I definitely had to. Yeah, because I was cutting out a significant income doing sales. But the thing is that you have the added stress of, all right, now I don't have a real job any longer. Mm-hmm. So I need to think about that. And in the back of my mind, I got used to it pretty quickly, and I adjusted my mindset, or the spending mindset, and operated off a budget and said, this is what my budget is. But I had a good idea, and luckily I was right, that if I did this full time and I stayed focused on it, that my Amazon income was going to ramp up pretty darn quick, which it did.
You almost have to go back to the college mindset, though, don't you, with the spending side of it. You go back to, hey, you know, we got to stretch that dollar because we're working towards something. I mean, to me, that's really what you got to do, is you got to shift your head to say, I'm going somewhere and I'm putting my head down, as you say, and you're going to do the work and you're going to have success. But yeah, it's going to sacrifice on this side, but you've done it before. Is that fair?
Yeah, it's definitely. And I just realized as you were saying that I'm leaving out an important part of this equation.
Uh-oh.
And that was that I had just gotten engaged.
I was going to say, is there a girl involved in this?
Gotten engaged before that, a few months before that, which added to the stress level. So I knew, all right, now I have to, I have another person that is depending on us. And my, well, at the time was my fiance, right? She worked full time as well, but she is a planner and we put together a plan together, and we definitely had a written plan of this is our income. If we get rid of my income, here's our spending. And so it was a written budget, and we had a savings, and we knew how long that savings was going to last if my theory was wrong that my revenue would increase.
And then you can always go get another job. That's what my wife said to me too. Okay. Yep. So this is a perfect lead into why you have a program called Forecastly, because you're an organized guy and you're projecting things, right? And you're crediting your girlfriend at that time, your fiance. Did she change your mindset? I mean, this is the vibe I'm getting from you, is you were a little loose, right? You were able to kind of roll with it. Is that fair?
I was a bachelor. Yeah, I was okay. A bachelor. I think that's fair to say.
Okay. And so she showed you the light. I like that. I think that's a good place to stop. I want to take a break and come back. And I want to talk how you transition from a pretty good seller, selling quite a bit, into a program. I'm assuming you were solving a problem that you had. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. Q4 is coming and you need to get ready now. How would you like some help in getting the keywords you need to drive your private label and wholesale sales even higher? Sounds good, doesn't it? Well, getting those right keywords takes a lot of time. Time that you just don't have. Well, I have the product for you. It's called Scope. Yep, Scope. Comes from the gang at Seller Lab, so you know you can trust it. Scope helps you optimize your listing based on the keywords that are actually helping your competitors sell their products. Yes, you get to see them. You want to get your listing in the best position to sell your products. After all, that's what we're here for, is to sell products. Jeff gave me a great offer for you. The first three keywords are free and $50 off an annual plan. That's the lowest price out there, and you get it because you're listening to my podcast. There's two simple ways to get it. Go to sellerlabs.com/momentum. There's a place to pop in a code. The code is momentum. So again, sellerlabs.com/momentum. Use the code word momentum. Or, even easier, text the phrase get scope. No space, just get scope to 44222 and follow the instructions. It's very, very simple. So text get scope to 44222. You're going to get three free keywords, $50 off. Great offer. Remember to tell Jeff I sent you. Another smart guy. You know, it takes me a while to get into his product because I love the story. I mean, again, the difference in the generations, we're seeing it. We're living through it. And those of us who are a little older, we're just so fortunate. I hope those who are my age, I'm 52 now, really appreciate that we get to play in this world. We are so lucky. Man, we just so darn lucky. He's a smart guy, very smart product, and I think his concept is sound. Again, reach out to him. Find out if it's a good fit for you. Don't spend money just to spend money. Don't buy a service if you're not going to use it effectively. But if this can help you not run out of stock, he drove home that point. He's so right. I have a friend who ran out of stock, and his BSR went down and down and down the wrong way. And then all of a sudden, you know, you had to try to go get it back. So this way you don't lose on it. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back and we're talking with Jeremy Byron from Forecastly or forecast.ly. So people can go to the website. I just want to make sure they know that. And we were left it with your fiance is really the key to your success. I mean, you have to marry up. I think that's the key to this take. I'm going to take this as a takeaway. Marry up like Jeremy did.
I think she gets a lot of credit for us starting off on the right foot. I think we should say.
Yeah, that's awesome. When you have a team and you guys are, more importantly, you guys work together towards something, right? How many people do you see get together and you're always like, man, there's oil and water, and they are completely doing different things. They're not working towards a common goal, and therefore it doesn't work, right? That partnership doesn't work. And when you take this approach, I think that that's the reason for success. Okay, so you sold for until when did, well, you tell me. So you started selling full time. Things are going well.
I did it for about 4 to 5 years. And I think at our peak, we were doing about $3.5 million or close to $4 million.
Wholesale?
In gross revenue. Yeah, wholesale resale.
Okay.
And yeah, it was great. I mean, for a couple of years, we, or 3 years in a row, I think we hit the internet retailer top 1,000, which was at 10 years ago, or however, when I first started selling, whenever internet retailer first started publishing their top 500, that was like the holy grail to me. It was like, oh, I got to get on that. So we made the internet retailer top 1,000, and it was great. I had a lot of fun doing it. I used a couple inventory management platforms that were out there. At one point I was doing both FBM or excuse me, I was doing dropship. So it was FBM, but it was dropship through this another inventory or order management platform. So I was sending the orders directly to the supplier, and I was also utilizing FBA. And there were, that software was very difficult to use operationally. It made made for a lot of issues inside of the company.
Wait, so which one? The drop shipping or the FBA?
The drop shipping.
The drop shipping.
The software that we were using to make that happen. So to process hundreds of orders a day was very cumbersome.
Well, let me ask you before. I don't want to go past this, because what I've interviewed a few drop shippers, and what they say, one of the biggest hassles that they've come into is the customer service issue became huge problems for them and has become big problems for them. Did you experience that back then?
100%.
Really?
When I was on my honeymoon, I remember I didn't want to work, and I told my wife up front, like, hey, I don't want to work, but I have to set aside 2 days. It wasn't 2 full days, but on 2 separate days, I need about 2 hours to answer customer emails and take care of any damages and returns and that stuff, which wasn't fun at all.
Was there a percentage? I mean, because I think I sell shoes and I get 16 or 17% return. The FBA handles most 90% of my customer service, 95% pretty much, right? Mm-hmm. What was your experience back then in returns for, damaged items? Because you're ideally not even taking the product back. You're sending it back directly to the drop shipping company, right, that sent it. But the customer communication between then, what percentage of customers did you have to deal with?
That's a hard number to say. I want to say that it was pretty high, because I was doing wholesale resale, and I would, a lot of times the listing said 12 pens, but I shipped them one pen. And it's pretty obvious with the price on there, but when you have 100,000 listings, you can't monitor each and every listing to know, all right, this is exactly the quantity. So we got a lot of those type of returns, which those are easy because I just give them a full refund and tell them to keep the product.
Right.
Or that's what I would do at the time.
But then, were those affected because people were changing the listings on you at that time or not?
Yeah, that was definitely part of it.
Okay.
And I think I don't do wholesale resale anymore, but I talked to a lot of sellers, and they still complain about people changing the listings when they shouldn't, because they're pushing bad data. But another piece of it was damaged goods. I sold whiteboards. I sold a lot of whiteboards, and they get damaged easily. So I had to deal with those. And in that case, I had to get them sent back because I needed to get reimbursed for the damage. And it was extremely time consuming. And not to mention, you get negative feedback.
Right.
Because people don't want to deal with that. Even though it was damaged by the shipper, they still give you negative feedback. Those problems have not changed, right?
I think they've gotten bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, they're, people are much more sensitive, and they're much more willing to return something, I think, than what they used to be, because they expect it. And if it's not here right away, they complain about it, or, right? I mean, it seems to me that I think the consumer is much more sophisticated and willing to get right on that computer and say, hey, where's my stuff to make it wasn't exactly what I wanted, therefore it's your responsibility. And so that has to have an impact on business. Interesting. Okay, so you were you did that for 4 years, you said?
Yeah, about four years, and then almost five years I did it. And then at one point, I was 100% FBA. and I kept running out of stock. I was using I tried two different inventory management platforms that were out there at the time and are still available today.
Okay.
And I kept running out of stock and having excess inventory. So I'd have tons of excess inventory on some products and then not enough inventory on other products. And finally, I said, this is ridiculous. Like, I cannot find something that's going to work for us. So I guess I don't want to jump ahead, but we ended up building an in-house software.
You can jump ahead. I mean, that makes sense to me. So, because I'm going to ask you why didn't it work? I mean, those other pieces of software, what was missing? What was it, the piece that, you know, that was missing that you were able to figure out? And I'm not criticizing them. They are what they are, and maybe they weren't designed for it. Yeah. Maybe that's the answer. But I mean, what was it that you were missing?
It was, I needed a demand forecasting platform. Okay. Without getting too technical. But anybody that looks up inventory management, it really comes down to demand forecasting. And that was, I realized that pretty quickly that's what it all comes down to, is if you can't figure out exactly, we'll use our pen example. If you can't figure out exactly how many pens you're going to sell for the next, say, 2 or 3 months, I don't know when I need to replenish those pens, exactly when I need to replenish them, but also how many pens do I have to ship to Amazon FBA to bring in?
Knowing that there's a lead time, knowing that there's going to be delays. What are the things that affect demand? Because you're using that phrase demand. So you're basically saying this number of customers are going to want this pen on such and such a date, right? I mean, in theory, are you getting that specific?
Yes and no. Okay. Yeah, at the time I was not.
Okay.
But it's really comes down to seasonality. So every single product on Amazon has seasonality. And just to point out for anyone that's listening, is I don't mean seasonality in that this is a Halloween costume that I'm selling. I mean seasonality in that Amazon gets more traffic on this day, so you are theoretically going to sell more product. Prime Day is a perfect example. You will, even if you have no promotions on Prime Day or let's say Cyber Monday, your account will sell more units.
Just because more eyes are coming to the market.
100%. Yeah, exactly. You have more people coming to the mall, more people are going to buy stuff.
I mean, is it as sophisticated to say that more people buy on a Monday than they do on a Sunday because they're at work and they start working at, you know, 8 a.m. East Coast and it goes all the way? I mean, is that seasonality?
Yeah, but you don't need to get, you don't have to dig in that deep.
Okay.
I can tell you that, but you don't have to dig in that deep because you're not going to say, all right, I'm going to bring in 3 days worth of inventory to Amazon. So you need to know, is it a Monday? Is it a Tuesday or Thursday? But you need to know what's the average going to be for the next, say, 2 months if you're going to bring in 60 days worth of inventory. So you need to say, all right, what is the average going to be per week? Is really that's the right way to do it, is to say, I'm estimating that I'm going to sell 50 units this week, 60 units the next week, 70 units the week after that.
And let's just, I want to clarify again, what would be the reason that would make those 3 weeks different? Most
sure.
Common reasons.
It could be category level seasonality. So bathing suits sell better during June, July, and August in the United States than they do in the middle of winter. Or it could be site level seasonality, where you have, that was our example before, you have more traffic coming to Amazon as a whole. So every category is going to perform better during that period of time.
Okay. I was just at Walmart this morning and I noticed that they have their beach towels on clearance. Now, it is the middle of July. You know, we're, you know, really the kids have just gotten out of school in my community, maybe 20 or 30 days. Probably 20, maybe 30 days. And yet, so we've got another month and a half to 2 months of pretty hot weather in the Northeast. And yet they're liquidating that inventory. That's seasonality, correct?
You are 100% correct. Yes.
That's not easy. How does that manager know that, okay, today's the day, start marking down the towels, Or today was Legos. I saw Legos. They really were clearancing out Legos. Now, I assume that's because they know there's a new version coming out, like cars, right? I think cars are easy, right? The 2018 models are getting ready to come out, so they're going to sell the 2017. But with beach towels, I mean, that's a pretty wild thing that they can get to that level of sophistication. And so you're suggesting that with Amazon, you can get to that level of sophistication too on my products?
Yes, if done right.
and when you have a lot of products, that's the art, right? If you got one product, you could probably do this yourself. I don't need a fancy software. Is that fair?
Yeah, definitely. So, and it doesn't, if you only have one, if let's just say that you only have less than five products, it's not, if you buy double the amount of inventory, assuming you're not buying hundreds of thousands of dollars of inventory, if you buy double the inventory that you really need with a single product and you only have five, it's not going to put you out of business. If you're a private label seller and you only have five products and you go out of stock during the holiday season for your best seller,
Then again,
you could have paid for Castly for 3 years. So you probably should have thought about that. But in terms of the time savings, you don't need an inventory management platform per se or inventory optimization. But when it comes down to demand forecasting, you can definitely run your business better if you have one.
So my theory on this stuff is, I take on a new task. My experience is it's about 2 weeks. That's how long it stays current. You know, we're able to keep up with it. Oh, I can do this. About 2 weeks, and then my attention span moves on to something else, right? What? it's the truth. And so by using software, and I'm pitching his software, I don't benefit. He's not paying me anything, no affiliate relationship. I'm just telling you that in my experience being an accountant, I mean, this is what I did, was planning budget. I remember doing the 9 budgets a year. I mean, literally 9 budgets a year, because I wanted to have that information. And then every week, a revenue forecast and an expense and profit forecast every single week. And so why would you do all that? Because you want better information. And you get better at it the longer you do it. And so in this scenario, it's kind of a set it and forget it by fine-tuning. It's kind of the repricer model, right? We all use repricers. Why do we do that? Well, because we want to get the best price we can possibly get given the market changes. This is basically the same concept, right? I mean, it's really saying, because if you run out of inventory, especially on private label, you're dead, right? I mean, it's so hard to get back in that rank and to get your rank back. It's just so difficult.
Mm-hmm. You know, I started the company because I saw a need. Like, we had the problem, and I was kept talking to other sellers out there in the marketplace. We would go to these different conferences. As a seller, I was going, and I would have these discussions with folks, and they didn't put enough value. And still today, this is all we talk about. They don't put enough value on inventory management. They search so hard to find the best product and decide what it needs to sell for, and in a lot of cases. Run marketing campaigns, promotions, work on getting feedback or customer reviews. These are all marketing activities, right? And then they just kind of let the thing run, and they forget about it. And they go on to their next product, and they don't focus enough on the core operations of the business that can really make the difference between a profitable company and a highly profitable company. And it's these small things that make a big difference.
It's what a CFO, you know, I was a CFO for a million years. That's what you did. This is where we used to shine, right? Because we can enhance that profitability, either through expense reductions or revenue gains, all that different stuff. You're basically hiring a little piece of that, and you're suggesting that this piece is a pretty important piece. Give me some examples, and I'm going to let you know, I don't want any wild, crazy statements, but I'm looking for an example of a reasonable seller and what they've been able to see as a benefit. And I'm looking at your website to see if you have any testimonials there, where people have been able to see the results coming through. Oh, here's one here. Yep, I do see you got a couple. Large Amazon sellers, hard to keep tabs on everything. Inventory reconciliation tool, which is neat. So you even can get some money back, which is a lot of services are doing that too.
So we're working on some public case studies now. It's funny because in the Amazon world, everyone's pretty careful about what they say, right? They don't want everybody to know their secrets. And I respect that. I'm an entrepreneur too. I do this reason why we do this is to help other entrepreneurs. So I'm pretty careful about that, but we are working on some public case studies where we can show exactly the percentage that was. What does a 40% improvement in demand forecasting mean? Well, if you do 100%, if you do $100,000 in revenue and you have $10,000 of stockouts every month, we estimate we can save you somewhere around $4,000 a month, or not save you, it's make you additional.
Right, so it's 40% of the lost. Right, the economic loss, right? So it's 40% of that. It's not of your overall 100,000.
And that statement is, you know, we can get into more detail, which we don't need to now. But I mean, with an individual seller, I can get into more detail because sometimes you can prevent a stock out, sometimes you can't. But it's not as easy to say, yes, you can invest $1,000 in advertising and make $10,000 on the other side. But our software is relatively inexpensive in terms of. We guarantee that you will make more money every month than our software costs by far.
Is really what it comes down to. That's a good question. Is in the initial conversation with you, do you charge for that? If I want to find out if this service is correct, because you give 2 weeks for free, right? So there's part of it, the answer. You give 2 weeks money back guarantee. Do I even have to pay for the first 2 weeks?
No, it's 100% free.
Okay, so it's 100%. But should it be a conversation to see if it's right for me? I mean, isn't that right? Because if I'm an 100% RA seller, I'm not sure this would work for me. I mean, what's the benefit? You know, yeah, I got to go make sure I can go get something at Walmart. I'm not sure that makes sense, right?
Yeah, it depends. That's what I thought at first when I started the software. I didn't think it was a fit for RA or OA. But the funny thing is that a lot of arbitrage sellers have found it very useful because they sell a lot of the
replenishables. We see that name all the time, right? Replenishables.
If you're selling replenishables, it's a fit for you.
Okay.
It's been surprising to me how much value some of our best customers in terms of they love the product the most have been arbitrage sellers. Actually, I think that's how you and I got introduced.
Wait, so that conversation, I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So if I want to inquire about this, there is no charge for that.
No. So I also want to point out, so that we give a 2 week trial because you don't need 30 days to figure out if a software is going to work or not work for your business. You're going to realize pretty quickly, here's what it's going to do or here's what it's not going to do. We're not a perfect fit for everybody. So I want to make sure that everyone has the time to figure out whether or not it's going to work. But the most important piece, more important than a 2 week trial, is that we do a free live one-on-one video call with each person that signs up because we want them to know, you know, a software, it doesn't matter if you have this best software in the world. If you don't know how to use it, then it's useless to your business. And we want to make sure that you know how to use it, and we also want to be able to point out some of the obvious things that we might spot in your account that you – because we look at it every day. So you know what, Steven? These three products, you really need to focus on these. You need to look at them 3 times a week, whereas these three products, we don't want to make the decision for you, but you can probably get rid of these. Things like that, or looking at your access inventory – pointing out different tips that you might not necessarily notice inside the tool if we weren't doing a live call with you.
So now we're getting ready for Q4, right? It's in the middle of July. Is there still time for me to get this up and running to get the benefit of the seasonality? Or do I need, I mean, how do you get history? You know, what are you going to predict for Q4, I guess because you're using eyeballs going to the site, you can help no matter what product, right?
Yeah. So one of the things that we are working on, and by the time folks are listening, we'll probably have it released. You know, if you were to build an internal tool, right, you only have data for your account. Mm-hmm. If I'm running a software service, I have access to tens of millions of products or hundreds of millions of products where I can see exactly how every category and subcategory performs on the site.
So over time.
Exactly. I have years worth of data for that many products.
On your site, you've been able to take that off and store it on yours. So you have those trends in your house.
Exactly.
You don't have to go back out to Amazon and analyze again and again and again. You've been able to pull that in, keep track of it, and now you have this predictive model.
Exactly. Yep. So what we're able to do is say, yes, Steven has only been selling this pen for the last month, But even though he only has a month's worth of data, we have years of data for this entire subcategory of ballpoint pens, and we can see how that category is going to perform through the end of the year, or however long. We're talking about Q4, so we'll say through the end of the year, so we can help you make a prediction. The funny thing is that a lot of sellers would, on their first call, they say, well, I want to look at 2 years. I want to look at the last year's worth of data because I want to be able to see seasonality. You cannot see seasonality for a product with any level of accuracy unless you have 3 years worth of data.
Really?
So even if you use the same product and you're a private label seller and you sold it last Q4 and you're expecting to sell it this Q4, you can't get that accurate just looking at a single year or even 2 years. It's statistically proven that you have to have 3 years worth of data.
So, which is hard.
That's a long time.
And you're not going to get that. Yeah, you're not going to get that from Amazon. Do you then go back and look at your models to see how accurate they've been and then adjust?
100%. Yep. Okay. That's what we do. That's why we have 3 data scientists on staff, because they're constantly looking to analyze what is working, what isn't working, what do we need to tweak? So this thing gets smarter and smarter with each and every product that we bring on, because we have more and more data to analyze.
And more and more things are happening. I mean, all these store closings have to have an impact, right? They have to, right? Those companies that were making stuff for, who just closed? Stride Rite shoes, right? There were company manufacturers making all that crap. Well, they didn't shut down their plants, most likely. They're still making it. Now it's somewhere else. So where is that? Is that affecting the shoe market on e-commerce? Well, logically, I would assume yes, right? Because there's fewer places to sell it brick and mortar. Therefore, so these things have to have an impact, and you're not going to see that, as you say. You know, you saw it last year. That doesn't mean that this upcoming year you're going to get that big boost again, because they've closed, right? You need that 3 years to get that filtered in there. That makes sense to me.
And now there are certain pieces I want to point out with any software that's out there, or any even if you were to do a demand forecast for a shoe yourself, right? There is what's called domain expertise is what it's called. Domain expertise means the software is not going to know that this store closed, so there was a flood of product into the market at clearance level prices. Or there was a press release that came out on this one day that drove demand for the next month, and that will never happen again. Something like that. That's where this isn't going to do everything for you. So you have to.
But isn't that where 3 years worth of data factors that in essence? It kind of smooths it. I mean, it's kind of smooths those anomalies. You know, I think back to my graduate degree, one of the things they taught you is adjusting for seasonality, right? You had to pull it out and then add it back in. You're kind of doing that.
Yes, that's exactly what we're doing.
Okay.
Yeah, we are. It's a bit more than just like a simple smoothing, but you're exactly right. It's taking it ends up figuring out a demand curve and figuring out what the demand is.
Sorry, I'm thinking of these things in my head as I'm asking these questions, because I'm trying to get that process down in my head to make sure that I understand it.
No, you got it. But the only thing I mentioned before about domain expertise, or the reason I mentioned it, is that a lot of sellers don't realize that they do need to understand it a little bit, or they need to understand their products to a certain extent, because that's why we have a purchasing team. Like, you can use a tool no matter what software it is, but you also have to know kind of how it's working or what it's doing, because
it's not perfect. Sometimes it's wrong, and you need to know that. Right.
Exactly. The software is not necessarily smarter than you, and you're not necessarily smarter than the software. But if you combine yourself and the software together, it is always smarter than you alone.
Yeah, no question. So think of a snowblower, right? And there have been no storms, or hurricanes. Hurricane's a good example. There haven't been any major hurricanes for the last 3 years, 4 years, and then all of a sudden there's one down south. Well, if you sell a particular product that would benefit them, you're going to have, you know, and if you can get it in the pipeline, I mean, you can kind of adjust for that. But it wouldn't catch it over 3 years if there hasn't been anything, right? You then in to say, whoa, there's something going on down south. I better order, or I better get this going, or whatever. And that makes sense to me. That makes perfect sense to me. So you've really built this up. You've got a lot of people working on it. When do you say that it's not right for a customer? I mean, I think you said, hey, if you only got five products or whatever. But, I mean, do you turn away customers and just say, hey, Steve, this really isn't going to be a good fit for you? I mean, or are you just after the money? And I know you're going to give me the PC answer, but I'm looking for the real answer.
No, I would always give you an honest answer. We will not take a customer on if they're not a good fit. I do this because I like to help other entrepreneurs. It's fun. My role in the company is to talk to people all day, every day. That's exactly what I want to do. Excuse me. but there are certain instances where folks are, they need data looked at a certain way, or maybe they're selling on lots. They're selling on many, many marketplaces. That's not going to be a good fit for us today as this is being recorded. That's not going to be a good fit for us today. And I'll say to them, here are the platforms that you might want to look at. And we have, as you know, it's a pretty small industry. We have a lot of friends in the industry. So we have certain products that we'll say, oh, go look at this or go look at that. We've heard good things.
It'll do what you need. You don't need all this.
Exactly.
That makes sense.
A lot of folks don't value understand the value of a stock out or avoiding a stock out. And they just want to talk about time savings. If you just want to print product labels and you don't put any value to having your products run out of stock, and you are worried about saving some time by not having to go in Seller Central to print labels, then we're not a good fit for you.
That's okay if that's their thing. You know, some people, that's the way they're wired. Good for them. And there are people like that.
No, definitely. And the reason, I guess I didn't explain that well enough. Some folks, the way that they're set up with their products and with their processes, they need it to work that way.
Mm-hmm.
Just to thank you for clarifying that. It's just the kind of the way things get set up. But if we will 100%, we will 100% tell somebody that you're not a good fit for the tool.
All right. Well,
it's pretty obvious within that first training.
I like what you said. The key was, in 2 weeks, you'll know whether the software's making a difference. No, not many other people that I've interviewed that sell software say that. They're usually like, well, you got to give it time, Steve. You got to give it time. You're saying no. You'll see results immediately. If not, then it's probably not the right tool for you.
I don't think you're going to see stock, like preventative stock out results, but you'll know, all right, this is going to pay off in the long run or it's not.
Yeah, it just told me to buy these, and guess what? Magically it worked. And it's like, okay, good. Now you get a little confidence. I like the purchase order. So this is really designed when you're a wholesale, especially if you have a lot of wholesale accounts or private label, when you're dealing with repetitive things, when you're ordering and it starts to get wild, when you start carrying quite a few SKUs and variations, all of a sudden it becomes pretty complex. And so this does purchase orders. Does it actually create the purchase order, and can I automate it where it actually sends in the purchase order? Are you that sophisticated, or does it create it and then I have to approve it?
The way that it works right now is you can approve it if you'd like to approve it. So if you have assistants that set up your orders and they need to be approved. So what it does is it spits out what we call a demand forecast or mm-hmm. a replenishment forecast and says, okay, Steven, you need to buy these 10 units of this product. You can create a purchase order from that. Creates the purchase order. It shows you're spending $1,000 and you're going to make $500 on this order is what we estimate.
Because it knows the profitability. So it goes through and takes the, is it like an FBA calculator, goes through and estimates out the rest and then your cost of goods?
100%. You got it. Yeah. So it says, okay, you're going to buy these 20 products and here's how much you're going to make on it, which is important to me because when I was a seller, I didn't have a tool like that said, here's what your investment is. So here's how much cash you're going to tie up. Here's the output of that.
Well, it really also tells me, especially like for Q4 purpose, I need to add more staff. Am I going to have enough profit coming in to cover that staff? I mean, that really helps you make the decision. Again, back to a CFO, that's really what a CFO would do, is they would sit there and say, okay, based on our projections, based on that, here's our net profit, and we want to add this incremental expense. It's not worth it to us, right? I mean, that's pretty interesting. I mean, I got paid a lot of money to do this. I used to sit behind a desk, though, but I didn't have to work so hard at it. So interesting. All right, what's next for you guys? I mean, I'm sitting here looking at it, and I see that, I mean, to me, that is very powerful, what you just said, right? With all those SKUs, and I can see the profitability, and I can project it. Where are you going next with it? I mean, how automated can this get?
So one of the big things that some of the things that we discussed today are in development. So they aren't publicly available. They're mm-hmm. in beta. By the time this comes out, they may be, they'll likely be publicly available or by the time someone's listening to it. But some of it is in beta right now. And where we're going with it is just to make the demand forecasting more accurate. So potentially tying in other softwares or other marketplaces. So if you're using an order management platform or a different inventory management platform, but you want to utilize the power of our algorithms or our forecasts, you will be able to do that. That's where we're headed.
Because that's your sweet spot, right? You're not an inventory management system per se. Your sweet spot is really that predicting.
Exactly. Yep. Mm. That is the core value of what we provide. And that's, I believe in doing what you're good at. And we are really, really good at that.
I like it. Now let's talk cost, because I want to make sure I get this in, because everybody's going to be like, Steve, how much does it cost? So you're pretty clear though, out on your website, how much it costs. I mean, I don't see, you know, you're not hiding anything, right? So plans and pricing are right there. And let's just get to it. Of course, I missed it when I moved around on my keyboard.
Sure, and I can go right into it if
go.
You like.
Yeah, please.
That's okay. So it starts at $50 a month, and our public plans go up to $200 a month. We do have enterprise-level plans, which a significant amount of folks are on, and I'd be happy. Those aren't publicly discussed, but those range up to about $1,000 a month. But it's all based upon the number of orders, because what I found as a seller was, if I only sell 500 orders a month, I don't. Why are you going to charge me the same price as someone that sells 20,000 orders a month?
Right.
So it's based upon the number of orders, because what I found is if you have more orders, you're going to have more stockouts. So it flexes with the value that you'll receive.
And then I see that if I paid annually, I get a 20% discount. Could I go on for the free 2 weeks, pay it monthly, make sure that I'm content, make sure everything's working, getting the return I want, and then switch to an annual plan from that point?
Definitely. Yeah, okay. You can switch to an annual plan. And actually, a lot of times we will advise folks, you know, test it for a month. You don't have to sign up for an annual plan up front. Test it out for 1 month paid and then decide to switch annual later if you'd like. But it's not like it's a giant investment where you're investing $5,000 for software to pay annually. It's relatively inexpensive.
All right. I want to close, but I want to get this, the best practice, because I think you've got a particular, you're in a good position to give some advice here based on what you've seen. So I'm thinking that the sellers that would be listening to my show would probably be selling 350 to a couple million bucks, right? They're in that middle, right? Mm-hmm. They probably got some employees, or they're going to have employees. They're designing their business to whether they need them or not. What's the best practices, or give me a couple best practices that people are using Forecastly correctly in those business models?
Sure. So with any business, I think, no matter what size you, well, as long as you're not really, really small, you have to have written processes. Hmm. Somebody told me this a long, long time ago, one of my mentors. You have to know exactly what you're doing today in order to improve on that tomorrow. And that comes down to having written processes. So even if it's just yourself, knowing exactly what you're doing, there's a lot of value there. And the best users of Forecastly, what we see is they may or may not have team members, but they know that they will replenish products where they have a certain margin percentage. So all right, we buy products that have a margin percentage of 20%, and we never invest over, I'm going to make up a number, $1,000 or $5,000 on a single product. And then so they can easily spit out a spreadsheet using the filters that we have to say, these are the 20 or 50 or 300 items we need to buy this week. And then I want to say that the other piece of it is, and this goes down to any seller, and this is advice no matter what software you're using, is understand, you know, take some time to educate yourself. Our best sellers take the time to watch the videos or read the documentation or even speak with us on email or on the phone to figure out, what am I doing right and what am I doing wrong? I see that it's telling me to buy 20. It looks like I have 20 in stock. Why is it telling me that? Ask.
Yeah. I like right? The why. I mean, that's important. You need to understand why. If it doesn't make sense, ask. I like that.
And I guess that just comes down to education. And, and I need to take some of my own advice sometimes as well. When there are softwares that we use here internally, that if we, it comes down to educating yourself on how to best utilize the tools that you have at hand. And that's important.
Love it. Love it. I mean, I think that's really good sound advice. And again,
can I say one last piece before?
Go for it.
If you don't mind. The other thing, that the last piece that comes to mind that I, a lot of folks forget, is you need to manually reconcile each and every inbound shipment. So it's important in some way to ensure that each and every inbound shipment is getting received, or you're getting reimbursed for it. I know that there are some services out there that do
I use an account manager that she does that for me.
There you go. That's right. Perfect.
That's a method. But are you saying that your software can do that too?
Well, your software can help you do it. You'll keep you organized to help you do it yourself if you want to. Or you can use, like you said, your account manager to do it. That's a perfect option as well.
Right.
I just want to make sure that it is getting done.
Yeah, there's enough money, you know, and if you're, you know, a pretty good scale, you know, $500,000 to $1 million, there's more than enough money there in savings to pay for your account manager. I say that all the time. That's the reason I use her, because she pays for herself based on that, without me doing it, and my time is limited. And I know that I could do it too if I want to. I don't want to. So therefore, I won't do it. I know it. And so therefore, that's why I pay somebody else to do it. I think that's good advice.
I'm happy to hear someone is doing it on your account, because a lot of folks aren't. They don't realize it until they start looking into it and they realize how much money they've lost.
You know, this, Jeremy, one of the things I think about is, because you're a vendor that does Forecastly, but you get to see all these other, you know, other sellers, and you get to understand that, this is a good lesson for people to hear again. Your vendors have a lot of information. Make sure you talk to them, and not only about the software. Hey, how's business? What's happening? What do you see? That's how you and I met. We're sitting on those couches, just sitting there yapping. And those conversations are where I learn the most. And you got to take advantage of that stuff. And you were very approachable, and I felt very comfortable. And I saw you talk about a whole bunch of other people over those couple days. And so I think that that's a really good opportunity. And I think that that's where I want to leave it. Best way to get in touch with you, if people want to learn more about your software. And again, Steve doesn't benefit. Make sure you understand that. I don't benefit, other than I get to hear that you had success as a seller. So best way to get in touch with you.
Sure. You can use, so our website is www.forecast.ly. And if you want to get in touch with me, we have an email routing system. You can use support@forecastly.com. And you can simply just put Attention Jeremy in there, and that will automatically get routed to me. And I read each and every email, and I try to respond to 99% of them.
That's going to be forecastly.com for the email.
Yes.
Okay, because that's different than the website. Okay, all right. Dude, I appreciate you taking the time. I really do. And I appreciate the advice, because I think that that's fresh, and I love the two-week comment. 2 weeks, you'll know whether your software is working for you or not. I appreciate that a lot. Take care. I appreciate it. Have a great 2017. Thank you so much.
You too. Thank you very much.
I understand it's another pitch fest, but it's, again, it's not done for me to make money. It's done for you to consider a possible way to save some time. Me too. I mean, because I might consider this one for me. I actually really like the concept here. So again, consider it. Vet them. Make sure it's a good fit for your business before you sign up for any of these things. And you don't need any of these things. I mean, you can do it all other ways. You could use Excel. You could do all that. So remember that. And if that's your thing, then stay with it. Don't spend the money. But if you're looking to buy time, if you're looking to advance, or if you need to spend time in other areas, this might be something that helps you. ecommercemomentum.com, ecommercemomentum.com. Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.